Today's episode of Flags Fly Forever is brought to you by Pennant Wars, our presenting sponsor for the podcast. Pennant Wars is an online baseball management game where you call the shots as the GM of your own baseball franchise. Build a team that plays your brand of baseball, draft and develop amateurs, spend big in the free agent market, or make blockbuster trades with other owners. Pennant Wars' in-depth and realistic simulation engine plays out full 162-game seasons, pitch by pitch, over the course of just 6 weeks. Best of all, the Pennant Wars universe is always on, so you can check in and manage your team from anywhere, at home, on your phone, or even at work. There are only a few weeks left in the fantasy baseball season, so now is the perfect time to get started with Pennant Wars. Head over to PennantWars.com to try it out for free today. That's PennantWars.com. Try it for free today.
Rougned Odor has 30. Yeah. And he was someone, you know, as you know, George, we were talking about last year on Tino that I said we were wondering if he would get to 20, you know, or 25. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think he has the ability to do that, but I don't think he'd have the ability to do it while hitting for average. You know, I said, I think he can hit 300 and I think he can hit 20 plus homers. I don't think he'll ever do it in the same year. Well, he's hitting 30 home runs and hitting 285, which frankly is more than okay. That's better.
Everybody, welcome to episode 103 of Flags Fly Forever. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined today by a very special guest. We have BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein, joining us to talk some rookies and prospects looking ahead to the 2017 season as we close out the final few weeks here in September. Craig, how's it going today?
It's going pretty well. I like that you built him up and immediately let him down. You're like, very special guest, and then it's like, oh, it's Craig.
Yeah, that's sorry about that, but
it's a rough 1-2 punch there.
A little bit. It's a pat punch.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is gonna be a lot of fun. This is your first appearance on the program, correct?
I believe it is.
We're crossing the streams for the first time. This is
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they said not to cross the streams.
That's true, but we've been known to break a few rules around here. So if you don't know Craig, obviously he's our minor league editor at Baseball Prospectus. He also is I guess you could say, co-host of Tino, or is it guest on Tino every week?
Yeah, there's three of us every week, but Ben Carsley does most of the hosting. But I suppose I'm a regular contributor or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't have a good word for it, but we'll figure it out. So Craig is on Tino. You can check that out. All of his stuff at BP is awesome. He is the brains behind our top 50 and top 100 lists. So a lot of cool stuff. We're going to get to a lot of prospects in this one, but first a little bit of housekeeping. You can follow all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a one-year membership. If you want to reach us on Twitter, I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. And Craig is at CD Goldstein. Correct? I have that right.
Correct. That is
correct. Yeah, that's right. You're also verified now, which is pretty
huge
cool.
Mistakes all around.
Exactly. All right, so let's dive right into it. We're going to talk about the 2016 rookie hitters to start things off. And really, the guy who stands out to me is Corey Seager. He's had an incredible season, no matter how you slice it. So far, he's approaching 600 plate appearances. He's at 588 right now as we talk. He's hitting 317 with a 378 on base percentage, slugging 535. He's just had an incredible campaign. If you look at some of the counting stats, 24 home runs, a couple of steals thrown in as well. So Seager's really kind of done it all for fantasy owners this year. Are you surprised at how he's basically come in and exceeded our expectations this quickly?
Yeah, I mean, on some level, this is this is a little bit meeting expectations for some, right? Because he was our top prospect entering the season, and I think, you know, carrying that label puts a lot of weight on someone's shoulders in terms of production. Obviously, he might not look at it, but in terms of what our expectations are for them. But I think something we do at Tino a lot is try and kind of preach, you know, patience or reasonable expectations of these guys, you know, performing at the major league level when you haven't been there before. Now, he did come up in September last year and was quite good then too, but you know, that's a relatively small sample size, and expecting that kind of production over the course of a full season is not necessarily reasonable. The fact of the matter is he's gone out and done that last September he hit .337, .425, .561 in 27 games. He's come reasonably close to replicating that over the course of a full season, which is incredibly impressive. And I think he's obviously the lead for National League Rookie of the Year. And I just don't know that. I think there's potentially another gear here in terms of power. He's hit 24 this year. If you look at him, his frame looks like he could fill out and add muscle, which was always the concern coming up, that whether he would be able to stay at shortstop, because the assumption was he would fill out a little bit more, maybe look a little bit more body type-wise by like his brother, Kyle. And he hasn't done that, but there's a chance he could down the line. He's only 22, so there's a lot of career left in him, and that could see him shift down the defensive spectrum. But if he does that, I would assume there's probably a little more power in him, and he could get to 30 plus home runs going forward. I don't think stolen bases are really part of his game, and I don't think you should be relying on that. But I also don't know how much it matters, and I would assume you're getting kind of a top three or four shortstop going forward if you're holding on to Seager in a year-in, year-out thing. Obviously, there's some flexibility there in terms of variation. But over time, I think he's on that level, despite the kind of glut of shortstops we have right now.
When I sort of look at the middle infield positions, in generally second base and shortstop, are you surprised at the type of production we've seen from those spots this year? If you look at it, it's really been a record year for second baseman in terms of the power output. Obviously, that's led by Brian Dozier, who at this point has, I think, now 39 home runs. He's hit like 30 of those in the last week.
Yeah, I was talking with former BP author Jason Wojciechowski, and was talking about Dozier last night, and I asked I was curious out of the last 10 or so games what, you know, how much he had moved his slash line, or how much of his production came in the last, you know, recent spate of games. And he said, like, during, this is from memory, so don't kill me if it's not exactly right, but since August 26th, he moved his slash line, I think his average up 11 points, his OBP up 13, and his slugging up 14 or something like that. I mean, which is substantial for something around a 10-game slate, right? I mean, that's incredible. And it's not that it was bad before. He was, you know, I think before that point, he was, you know, slugging 550 or something like that. So, you know, it was already a good line. He's just gone on a ridiculous tear. Just in this recent week plus.
Yeah, I saw a column, I think it was August Fagerstrom of Fangraphs who wrote the piece, but it was about how Dozier's just crushed inside fastballs and anything on the inner half of the plate, and it's like, just walk the guy. What are you doing pitching to him at this point? It's kind of insane. Dozier obviously has been a huge standout. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think the power is a little bit surprising, and it's coming from some different places. Obviously, Dozier hit 28 home runs last year, so I think he was a reliable power source. It just wasn't this type of power. But then you've got Jose Altuve hitting 22 home runs, and that's something that was entirely unexpected. And, you know, I think, you know, Neil Walker went on kind of a Dozier-like run early in the year, right? And that put him over 20. I'm not sure the last time he'd been over that. He was more of like a 15 to 18 homer type. Ian Kinsler's been healthy, so he's up over 20. Daniel Murphy has been better than we thought. And, you know, that power binge started, obviously, late last August. So
yeah, it
it was not clear if that was something that was going to maintain going forward. I think at this point we can assume it will, based on the swing changes he's made to allow him to tap into that power. Beyond that, I don't think that there's, you know, Rougned Odor has 30.
Yeah.
And he was someone, you know, as you know, George, we were talking about last year on Tino that I said we were wondering if he would get to 20, you know, or 25. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think he has the ability to do that, but I don't think he'd have the ability to do it while hitting for average. You know, I said, I think he can hit 300 and I think he can hit 20 plus homers. I don't think he'll ever do it in the same year. Well, he's hitting 30 home runs and hitting 285, which frankly is more than okay. That's better. And that's a guy that you're wondering how he's hitting for power so much when he walks under 3% of the time. Because you're wondering why are pitchers throwing him something in the zone when he barely walks. But it's something that it is surprising. I think, you know, I don't think anyone was anticipating 30 from Odor, necessarily 25 from Murphy, 22 from Altuve. But on the flip side of that is shortstop, where I think there was a reasonable expectation of good power production. It hasn't quite matched second base, but If you're looking at it, I mean, the shortstop position has gotten so deep recently. You have Machado, you have Seager, you have Correa, Russell, Bogarts, and that's before you get to guys like Tulowitzki or even Marcus Semien hitting 20 home runs is not the biggest surprise in the world, you know. So I think that there's some. I think the big surprise on shortstop is Brad Miller hitting 26. At the same time, you know, there's a lot of talent there. It's led by Manny Machado in terms of power production right now. But I think, you know, Bogart's hitting only 17. I think, you know, he's a guy who could get to 30 down the line. So I think there's some flexibility there and that there's probably going to be a decent amount of power going forward. I don't think this is necessarily a one-year blip.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. You touched on a lot of topics, and you did a really good job of that. I think the name that stands out to me, two of them that you didn't mention, that I think fantasy owners would be interested in how to value them going forward are Trevor Story and Aledmys Diaz, because they really stand out as true outliers along the lines of a Brad Miller or something like that, because no one really had these huge expectations for them coming into the year, but both of them under the age of 25, they've really done well. So how do you value those extreme changes in player performance going forward with those two guys specifically at the middle infield spots?
Yeah, I'm someone who's generally a little more cautious to buy into something unless it's something that we anticipated kind of ahead of time, which you know, I will admit straight up, leaves you guilty of confirmation bias, but I do tend to slow things down. So when you're talking about a guy like Aledmys Diaz, I you know, this type of performance is, I mean, it's unreal, and I don't want to take anything away from what he's already done. But I really struggle to believe that, you know, a guy who never showed this type of performance in the minors is going to be capable of reproducing it consistently going forward in the majors. And that's less a knock on his true talent than I think, you know, maybe he takes a step forward. But I also think, given time next year, pitchers and the league will adjust back. And that's kind of the name of the game when you're talking about development and how guys progress, is whether they show the ability to adjust back to a league and to pitchers who will constantly adjust to them. I think that's the kind of overarching battle that we see going forward with every kind of prospect or young player. I kind of buy it more with Story than I do with Diaz. He has a little bit more of a prospect pedigree. He was a first round pick, supplemental pick in the first round a few years ago, and he had a lot of promise at some point. He has a lot of contact issues, and he still struck out at, you know, 31% this year, but the power was always there. Coors will obviously help. It's a great place to hit, but the power was there anyway, and it's only accentuated in Coors. And there's a lot of outfield to find when you hit the ball in the air. And so I don't, you know, I'm a little surprised at the 270, you know, the 270 average. I probably would anticipate something closer to 250, 260. But that being the case, I think a slugging percentage in the 500s is not unreasonable given his skill set and where he plays half his games. So I in general, I'd say pump the brakes. But I do think there's value to be had in Story. I'm a little more bearish on Aledmys Diaz.
Yeah, middle infield's so crazy deep. We haven't even talked about arguably the most exciting prospect in fantasy baseball, and that's Yoan Moncada, who's played five games in the major leagues so far. And yeah, according to my timeline, he's the most overrated prospect of all time. You can click here to begin the slideshow now. It's crazy. I see the tweets, and these aren't just Yahoo Red Sox fans tweeting these things. It's beat writers, and there's, you know, calling for Travis Shaw. And it's like, look, the reality is he's a 21-year-old prospect who's played 45 games above single A. Like, he's going to struggle against major league pitching. This is not unexpected.
No, it's not. I mean, he never appeared at AAA, right? I mean, this is
right.
The jump to the majors is substantial, no matter where you make it from, and making it from lower down the minors is even harder. You know, he was put into a tough situation. He's not really a third baseman. He's played it before in his career, and I know they gave him time at it in the minors a little bit, but This is a tough situation for him to come into, but also relatively a good one, right? I mean, this is a dynamic lineup, whether they're getting production from third base or not. And so he has the ability to fail without impacting too much the production of the offense. It's obviously an issue, but when you compare the baseline to Travis Shaw in the second half, I mean, I don't remember his full slash line, but wasn't he hitting like 189?
Yeah, let's just say it's not good.
Right. So, I mean, look, is striking out seven straight times a problem? Yes. But, you know, let's compare him to another talented guy who we haven't brought up yet, but we're probably going to get to in a little bit. You know, Alex Bregman came up and went 1-for-32. And then since then, he's been like a 300 average guy with,
yeah, exactly,
with six home runs. I mean, this is, you know, these guys, as I just said about Story and Diaz, this is about adjustments and adjusting back to things. And, you know, it's something that might take a little longer for someone who's younger or less familiar or just hasn't seen the type of quality stuff he's seen on a daily basis. And the learning curve might be steep, but I do think he's someone who wouldn't have rated so highly on prospect lists. And I get that there's kind of a doubling down in this situation where, you know, we create the prospect list and then use it to support a theory going forward. But part of this is talking to people who evaluate guys professionally and getting a grip. And, you know, part of their job is to determine, you know, who's going to make adjustments and who isn't. You know, who's succeeding because of their skill set and what they're able to do at the time, and who's going to be able to, you know, be pliable as they move up the chain and adjust their approach. And, you know, those people believe in Yoan Moncada, and I think there's a lot of, you know, I think if it was based purely on offensive production, Moncada had a really good chance for being the top prospect in baseball at our midseason list. I you know, he had him top, I think, three, maybe top five, but I think he was third. But he, you know, the point is that his bat is the last thing I'm worried about, and he's just, this is growing pains in my eyes. And I think it's something that could fix itself kind of as starkly as Bregman did. I don't think that's a prediction I want to go out and make, but I do think it's a possibility.
Yeah, well, the reason fantasy owners, and I think the fantasy industry as a whole, is so excited about Yoan Moncada is that he's a five-category contributor. He's a guy who can give you...
We're talking about Corey Seager and, you know, kind of the impact he's made, and he has one stolen base all year. You know,
yeah.
Moncada is, you know, this. I was talking to Ben Carsley the first game he was up, and he said this, and it's 100% true. There's no reason he should be as fast as he is for as big as he is. And that's something that bodes well for a sport a fantasy sport that values power and speed. You know, and so look, if you want an example of his power, I don't think he's necessarily going to come in and hit 30 home runs, but of course, we said that about Rougned Odor too. But at the same time, if you want an example of his power, Go watch the Futures game. I mean, he unloaded on one in Petco, and I understand that they move the walls in and stuff like that. It's not what it used to be, but he absolutely destroyed a ball. And it gives you an example of kind of the raw power that he has and what he's able to do with his strength. And then you go watch him run, and it's unbelievable. I mean, this is, the skill set that he has is insanely tantalizing. And look, it's not showing itself right now, but it's also been 5 games.
I think part of the problem, Craig, is that we're maybe developing, and you see it with Moncada right now and some of the things that are being said, is that maybe we're developing unrealistic expectations for these prospects based on the number that have come up and made a significant impact and become immediate superstars, you know, in the mold of a Carlos Correa or a Lindor. Do you see that being the case now, that maybe we're getting so used to these guys coming up and having a huge impact that now we're expecting that from everyone, and we forget that it's really difficult to hit in the major leagues?
Yeah, I mean, I think on some level that's always the case. I don't want to say it's like the recent guys who have spoiled us. I think, first of all, when you're talking about prospects and kind of selling prospects, you're selling hope, and people want to believe, right? So I don't think it's un... I don't think it's... I think it's completely understandable that that's the case. At the same time, I think, you know, let's take someone like Anthony Rendon, right? He was the 6th overall pick in the draft. He kind of hit all the way up as long as he was healthy. He had a good debut that was, you know, for his age, for a rookie, it was good, and you could dream on it. And then he came out and he had... I'm blanking on which year it was, but he had that really good year where he stole he stole 17 bags. It was 2014. He looked like the guy that we all thought he was going to be, right? And it just, like, everything made sense. He had the 2013 debut where, you know, he might not have hit for average as well as we thought, but it was solid enough.
It was a second round pick in 2015 redrafts.
Right, because in 2014 he hit 21 homers, he stole 17 bases, he hit .287. It just, everything looked legitimate. And this was our talk about, like, this was somewhat what we expected, right? You could buy in. It was really easy to buy in because we felt that way. We felt that this was what he could do to begin with, right?
And the track record in college too.
But then you look at him in 2015, he got hurt again. Even 2016, it's not quite been what we're used to. It's 17 home runs, it's 12 stolen bases. He's kind of putting himself back on the map. But the point of all of this is to say that this is, you know, we always talk about in prospects, but progression isn't linear, right? Development isn't linear. These guys, you know, again, it's the league adjusts to them. They have to adjust back, and that can take a little time. And, you know, I think we also have other examples that are a little more stark. You look at Nick Castellanos, struggled for several years, was not the guy we thought he would be for several years, and finally looked to be breaking out this year. You know, Mike Moustakas got 2,000 plate appearances before he was a league average hitter. And he looked like he was continuing that positive trend this year before the injury. But these things are not, look, we've definitely had a spate of guys who are immediately productive. We talk about Lindor, we talk about Seager, even Correa, but Correa wasn't, you know, he didn't take that expected step forward this year that a lot of people anticipated. And, yep. You know, I think that's something that we all just have to keep in mind, that even if someone is immediately productive, it doesn't mean they're productive from that, you know, from that point onwards.
Yeah, Gregory Polanco is another good example of a prospect who had the
absolutely
big pedigree, struggled for a while before really finding himself this year. So, speaking of struggling, you mentioned Alex Bregman a little while ago, but I think the interesting thing for me is when you look at the power, because this is something that scouts were a little bit divided on. I know it's something we've talked a lot about internally at BP, and I'm sure you have with some of our minor league writers and scouts, that this power has really kind of materialized over the last year or so, and he's hitting for a lot more power than I think we thought he would coming out of LSU when he was drafted. So how much of that do you see him sort of retaining or building on going forward? how legitimate is this over-the-fence power that we're seeing from Alex Bregman? Because he seems to have, you know, a lot of it. He looks a lot like Dustin Pedroia in terms of how he swings and the size and what he's been doing.
Yeah, that was the big question for me as I kind of developed the top 50, right? Was everything going into this year on Bregman kind of sounded, you know, a little bit like what we talk about with Dansby Swanson, right? Like where everything's like above average and, you know, maybe he's got a plus tool here or there, but it's not it's not impact, right? It's not something that you're like, oh, this is a game-changing aspect of his performance. And those type of guys, well, insanely valuable in real life, are not always the guys who you want to reach for in fantasy, because they give you a nice baseline, but if they're off in any category in any year, all of a sudden you're really hurting, right? So that's the potential fear. At the same time, this is someone who he went on a power binge this year, and when I asked for, you know, people's opinions on whether this was real or, you know, kind of how it happened or what was going on, whether it was kind of a fluke based on where he was playing or just, you know, sometimes these guys, you know, run into a few early on and excuse everything. What I heard back was that, you know, there was a change in kind of how people saw his power going from kind of like a 50, which is, you know, average, to a plus grade more towards a 60, or even if it settled at 55, that's still kind of a tangible enough difference to matter in terms of fantasy production. I mentioned him before, and he started off 1 for 32. It was that big thing. Since then, he's hitting .321, .375. And the big thing that you're referencing, and to answer your question, is he's slugging .588. He's got 7 home runs. I mean, that's a big, .588 is big. And I, you know, look, Mark Trumbo isn't even slugging .588, and he's got 41 home runs. So do I think he's a .588 guy? No. Do I think he's now in the 20, you know, around 20 home run range over the course of a full season? Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable. I think if you wanted to throw 18 to 22 as an expectation for next year, I think that's probably reasonable. And if someone wanted to be more aggressive, I think that there's a possibility he could get above that. But I probably would try and temper expectations into the, you know, the 18 to 22 range.
Yeah, Alex Bregman's the type of prospect that I find myself gravitating towards a little bit more lately, just because I really like how natural it looks like the game comes to him. He doesn't really look overmatched. I mean, even when he was struggling, I mean, he was still scalding the ball. He was hitting the ball hard. It wasn't like he was striking out, you know, 20 times in that 30 at bat stretch. So I've been really encouraged with
just burying Yoán Moncada again.
No one's a bigger Yoán Moncada fan than me, but it's hard to believe that he was going to come up and be a superstar right out of the gate. I just think that was really unrealistic. He was coming off an injury. He hadn't really played a ton at Double A.
I would bet if you talk to Red Sox people, they would tell you that they didn't expect that of him. You know, that even if, you know, he hit 220 or whatever it is, and was, I mean, look, this is a rough stretch, but if he could play solid defense and, you know, just provide a little spark here and there, get in pitcher's heads when he is on the bases, you know, again, the baseline for being better than what they were getting was extremely low, and he might not be at that baseline quite yet, but it's also been 5 games, and so people need to give him a little time. But my guess is the expectation of the Red Sox were relatively low, and that this was still something that would help them anyway.
Well, if you're a Red Sox fan who's concerned, remember you watched Jackie Bradley hit like a .180 for 3 years.
About progression not being linear, right? I mean, this
that's a great exactly example. Exactly. And now Red Sox fans wouldn't trade him for Chris Sale. So, you know, it all comes back to that. All right, so let's talk about some more guys who've been impressive in their debuts. There's a couple here, but I think Gary Sanchez, we talked a lot about him on the last Flags Fly Forever with Brett Sayre and Mike Gianella, and that was more looking from a moving forward the rest of the season standpoint. But I want to get your sense long-term about Gary Sanchez, because obviously the first 130 plate appearances here have been stellar, hitting .348 with 11 home runs, but what do you view him long-term as? Do you see him as a top-of-the-position kind of fantasy asset right up there with I wouldn't put him in the class of Buster Posey, because no one really is. But do you see him right there in that next group, sort of where we're going to rank Kyle Schwarber moving forward these next couple of years, assuming he gets back and is healthy?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a kind of a redraft format, what we're talking about is someone who is the tier below Posey, certainly, and maybe even if you wanted to kind of have a half tier or something where it was Jonathan Lucroy. I mean, I think Lucroy is kind of the clear second guy right now, in terms of, you know, he's just got the track record and he's in a good place to hit with a great offense now, and he's reliably productive. But I think if you wanted to put Sanchez in that group behind him, I think that's reasonable. The other thing with Schwarber is I really don't know if he's a catcher, or if he's going to get eligibility going forward. The knee injury might be enough to convince them not to push him behind the plate, even enough to get eligibility going forward. So if I'm counting on a catcher in terms of that sense, I'd rather take Sanchez, who has made put in a lot of work, and the Yankees have worked with him a lot, and to help him stay behind the plate. He's got a huge arm, but it was the other aspects of the game that needed work, and he's made progress in that area. And kind of once he was able to set that baseline where he made that progress and it wasn't taking up all of his energy, I think that's where his bat really shined, because his bat was always there. People love the bat from the get-go, and the question was whether he was going to stay a catcher or not. I think what happened was potentially, he was really focused on improving his defense, and it kind of caused the bat to lag a little bit. But once he set that baseline for himself and felt comfortable behind the plate with what he was doing, he was really able to let the bat shine. And he's also shown an improvement in kind of his plate approach, and he's got big power, and now he's not chasing bad pitches or pitchers' pitches, and he's forcing pitchers to come to him, and he's able to feast on the offerings that he deals with the best, right? So that's something that I think it's shown itself this early on. Obviously, no, I don't think he's a 348 hitter. I do think he's going to hit for power in that park, and I do think he can hit for average. I don't think it's necessarily a 300 average, but because I just, look, you're going to hear me say that a lot about these guys, because there just aren't that many guys that are reliable 300 hitters year in and year out. But I do think he can hit for a reasonable average and provide you with plenty of power, especially with this adjusted approach.
Yeah, it's going to sound kind of crazy, but if you've ever been in a minor league or a big league clubhouse, I mean, I think there is something to be said about the mindset of a player and their mental state and the confidence level. And I think that's what we're seeing right now with Sanchez. He looks to be a guy who just is oozing with confidence right now, and his abilities behind the plate have come so far that now he's more confident, and it's translated into his production at the plate as well. So I love what I've seen from him.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you could talk to pretty much any major league player, they tell you how important confidence is, and how that, that's when you get guys in a slide like Moncada or like Bregman was, having the confidence to go out and assume you're going to snap it or get out of it. That kind of stuff gets in people's heads. And I think kind of underplaying that stuff is, look, I get that there's variability and people go on runs and stuff like that, but the mentality and how you approach what you're doing absolutely has an impact on your performance. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, there's no metric to quantify it. We can't go to a leaderboard like Statcast or some of the ones on BP and look at those types of variables, but they matter.
You read The Only Rule, right?
Yes.
Or yep. No? Yeah, I mean, Sam and Ben tried to look at it, have people kind of come in and mark a confidence thing and see how they were doing. I think it can be tough to measure. I think there's probably a point at which there will be at least a chance to get some sort of grip on it. But I absolutely do think that, and there are studies in workplaces and stuff like that. Being positive and having a positive environment helps productivity, and that's kind of the way it is. Whether you have kind of a performance aspect in terms of you're playing a sport or whether you're doing something at a desk.
Yep. So some other guys who've had really strong seasons. I think I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up our guy, the big chill, Nomar Mazara, who's hitting .275 with 17 home runs and 502 plate appearances. The crazy thing about him is he's only 21 years old, and he looks completely unfazed by anything that happens on a field. I don't know what the ceiling is, because I think he could do this for the next 15 years or so, like this exact stat line. I think he could replicate that, and that would be fine. But do you think there's anything more in the tank here with Mazara, or is this sort of a nice realistic floor to project him for moving forward? Either way, he's a really solid fantasy asset to own. But
I mean, I think it's both, right? I think this is a very nice solid floor, and I absolutely think there's more in the tank. This is someone who I saw going into the year. This was my guy, right? I've been talking about him for a few years. I love Mazara. It's such an easy swing. The power is easy. He's a big guy. And I think, you know, I love his approach to the game. And like you said, nothing really seems to faze him. You know, I think it's reasonable to look at his line and be both extremely impressed and not that impressed. I mean, this was a top five prospect coming into the year for us. And, you know, if you go by WRC plus, he's at 97 right now, which is not exactly something to write home about. But from a fantasy angle, you know, the 17 home runs is certainly nice. And again, like you said, he's 21 and he's shown the ability to kind of adapt and adjust throughout his career. And I have very few doubts that he'll be able to do that going forward. And I frankly, look, this is someone who I've been willing to go out on a limb on before and who I'm going to do it now. And I expect him to be a 30 homer guy. I really do. And I think 275 is about right for his average. I think there's probably a few years where he can, you know, push 285, maybe 290. But I do think that he's someone who should settle in the 270s with significant power, and that he's a really impressive kid, a really impressive guy at the plate. And you know, I don't know. I've been raving about, you know, I talked about him probably three separate times on Effectively Wild when they had me on. He's someone who started off so well too, right? He hit like .330 early on and he went into a tailspin probably not dissimilar to Bregman or Moncada, and he's kind of settled out here, and so it kind of seems like a reasonable middle ground. But I think that upside is fairly attainable for him.
Yeah, I wasn't totally blown away by Mazara, especially in the second half of the year this year. But I think all things considered, this is the type of profile you want. He seems like a guy he's never going to have a season where he kind of bottoms out and hits like .210. I don't see him as that type of guy. I think he's, even when he struggles, he's going to be a very productive player, and he's only going to get better. So I'm in the same boat as you with Mazara. Trey Turner is another guy I do want to talk about, because he's already stolen 21 bases and just over 200 plate appearances, and he's hitting .344, 23 extra base hits. It's crazy because he's the opposite end of the spectrum. He's a guy who spent way more time in the minor leagues than he probably needed to. What do you sort of see him doing next year, and is the hype going to get really crazy on him when people start to project those types of numbers out over a full season of at-bats?
Yes. So Turner was a guy. So there was a lot of, when we were creating the top 50, I found like I had a lot of fluidity between basically number four and like number 14 or so. And I had Turner kind of as high as in the top five, and I think he settled in at 13 or 14. And there was a lot of fluidity there because he's such a potential impact guy, right? He has the speed, and that's obviously there. He's not devoid of power, despite being kind of more of a slight guy, and despite his speed, he's not devoid of power. But the question is how well the hit tool is going to play. And, you know, look, if he's going to hit .344, he is an incredible game-changing asset in fantasy. I think, you know, this is a guy that is like Rougned Odor. He's walking under 3% of the time. And I do wonder how that's going to play itself out. Look, he's got a BABIP that's 407 right now. That's not, despite his speed, look, that's pretty much not sustainable. Even if you want to put him on the high end, you can throw like a 360 or, you know, BABIP or something like that. But this is, I think that there's going to be more focus on how to get Trey Turner out kind of as next year unfolds, and that it's going to play itself out in kind of I think he could go through a relatively rough stretch there. And I look, he's a great prospect. Look, if you're number 13 on a top 50, you're doing really well, right? There's a lot of confidence in a prospect like that. So I don't mean this to kind of reflect poorly on him. At the same time, I don't think 344 is at all reasonable. And I think, you know, the question with him was always on the hit tool. And some people saw the light there and saw a lot of positivity. And that was more of like a guy who could hit 280. But I think there's the potential that he's like a 260 hitter. And if he is that, and if he isn't walking, all of a sudden he's not on base to steal bases enough, and you're kind of wondering, like, is he more of a Billy Hamilton type, which is still incredibly valuable, but he's not quite as fast as Hamilton, and so you get kind of this kind of fractured value where it's harder to parse. And some, you know, if you're in a weekly, you know, some weeks he'll crush it for you, and other weeks he'll give you nothing. If you're in a roto, it probably balances out and is a little more easy to stomach. I think the power is nice, and this is obviously amazing. Look, I'm enjoying the ride. He's really fun to watch, and I hope it continues. But there's a big part of me that looks at kind of what he's doing, the components of what he's doing, and says this is going to collapse at some point.
I love Billy Hamilton. Now I'm distracted. you can't say that name and have me not go on a tangent. We're going to lightning round the rest of these hitters here because we're running a little bit behind. But I love lightning rounds. So these are going to be over-unders. We'll start with Byron Buxton. Is he the rookie hitter from this class? I guess this one isn't an over-under, but do you think he's the rookie? Is he the rookie hitter from this class that ultimately surprises everybody, either in a good way or a bad way at some point in the next few seasons?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's going to, you know, I think this is another example of a guy who lost a lot of time, and, you know, the development and adjustments have been tough, but I think it would be silly to forget about him and someone of his skill set. So I think he could absolutely explode at some point in the next year. I think he's a guy that, once it clicks, it's going to click, and we're all going to be like, how did we forget about him?
Yeah, exactly. Tim Anderson, on base percentage, over under 300 next season?
Slightly over, but only slightly.
Slightly? Like 305?
Yeah, that's exactly.
All right, Andrew Benintendi, who is injured right now, but has looked pretty good in the limited time that he's played, batting average, over under 300?
I'm gonna say under.
Okay. Max Kepler, home runs, over under 20.
And go under. I've never been a Kepler guy, and I've looked bad so far, but I'm willing to keep doing it.
He had a few weeks there where he was just crushing the ball and made all of us look pretty bad for not having him higher. But, you know, now he's struggling, so I don't know. We'll see. Wilson Contreras, home runs and stolen bases combined, over under 25.
I like Wilson a lot. I'm going to go over. I think he can do it.
Okay. Perfect. Keon Broxton, stolen bases, over under 40.
I see, this to me is an easy under, and it's not that it's his skill set, it's the playing time. I don't know if he's going to warrant a full season next year. Mm-hmm.
All right, David Dahl, 2017 ADP, over under pick 75.
Is this whether he should be or will be?
Let's go both. Let's go with should be and then will be. So should be first.
I think he probably should be slightly over. I'm a big Dahl fan, though. I think there's a lot of reasons to buy into what he's doing. But probably I think 75 is about right. I think that makes sense to me. But there is some considerable risk there. I think he will be under. I think there's a lot, you know, because there are reasons to buy in, people are going to bite, and the course factor pushes him pretty hard.
I spent like 10 minutes trying to think of the right number for that ADP because like 50 was outrageous. Yeah. Well, thank you. Raimel Tapia, Mao's boy, and partly mine because he's awesome. Home runs and stolen bases and batting average. I'm going to say over under 25 combined home runs and steals, and for the average, 320.
So this is similar to the Broxton question, but less about his talent. I don't know if he gets the playing time to get over. I think I'm going to go under on both. I think 320 is aggressive to put on anyone, despite Coors and his ability to hit. The homers and stolen bases is more of a function of playing time, because I do think over a full season he gets there. But with Dahl and Blackman and Parra and Carlos Gonzalez,
what are they going to do with the outfield? Because this makes no sense.
I think there's a possibility they trade Blackman. They kind of explored it at the deadline, and I think they can get a nice haul for him because he's been continued to be impressive. At the same time, that still leaves them with four guys, and Parra is not necessarily someone who you sit Tapia in favor of. He's going to get some playing time. They gave him the money. I think they're going to feel a little obligated to give him a little time. So
with Tapia, he's played pretty well in center field in the last couple of months since they've transitioned him over.
I don't think he's a natural center fielder, and I think Coors center field is kind of a different animal altogether.
I think he could do like a Christian Yelich center field type thing. Or you could get away with it.
Might be reasonable.
Yeah. All right. AJ Reed and Aaron Judge. This one's not an over-under, but are you concerned about the struggles they've had this year? And are we overreacting too soon with these guys? Because two very good power bats.
I mean, I think on some level, it's always, the definition of overreact is over-responding, right? So, in that sense, yes. But are concerns reasonable? Absolutely. I'm concerned about AJ Reed against lefties. Aaron Judge, I'm a little less concerned about. You talked to him. I don't know if you have insights. I don't, but you had an interview with him. I think he's a big guy, and he's getting, some of that big zone exploited right now, but he's got a relatively short swing for someone his size. The power is really natural. I think he can find a way to manage. If you think he was going to come in and hit 280, I think, that's an expectation issue. But, I think for someone of his abilities, 250, 260 with power, that's what we should have been expecting all along, and I think he can get there.
I don't think he's a very aggressive hitter. I think he likes to get deep in accounts. I see a lot of Carlos Santana in his game a little bit, where he likes to get deep in accounts, and sometimes that results in strikeouts. That's going to happen anytime you're working a lot of two-strike counts when you're that big. I think he could struggle for a while, but I think there comes a point where he does start to put it all together. And I think we saw that at AAA this year. I mean, he really struggled to start the year and then went on a hot streak and ultimately ascended to the Bronx. So, Aaron Judge, I'd be less concerned about than AJ Reed, who the struggles against lefties are, that's going to be an issue for him, especially with playing time, given the other options they have. Joey Gallo, fantasy relevance, over under zero.
I'll go over. I think it's a safe over on that sense. It's obviously
what's going on.
It's been a tough year for him, but I don't, next year is a new year, and I think Texas is either, they're a very deep franchise, but every franchise suffers injuries. I mean, we've seen that with Texas this year, and he's been jumped by some guys, like Mazzara, Profar got healthy and got some time. At the same time, they could trade him and put him in a situation where someone lets him sink or swim. I think either way, he's going to have relevance. As we've talked about, this is about adjusting. I don't know if he's got the ability to do it as well as some others, but I don't think that type of power ever really becomes irrelevant. Maybe Mark Reynolds, but Mark Reynolds was plenty relevant for quite a long time. He was relevant this year.
Yeah, I love the people who are like, oh, he's Russell Branyan. It's like, Russell Branyan was okay. He was good.
It's not
like,
a bad outcome.
He was fine. Like, he wasn't a superstar, but he played for 13 years or something like that. Okay, last over under. Dansby Swanson, head and shoulders commercials, over under 1,000.
If they're smart, 1,000. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's more of a Garnier Fructis guy. It's hard to say. He needs to be in front of our faces a lot, though. I think he and Benintendi have, but I think Benintendi's hair doesn't get enough play.
Great decision for him in terms of his hashtag brand, diving into home plate without the helmet so he could show off the hair. Great move.
That was a strong move.
Yeah, I like what he did there. I think it was underrated, but all right. I do want to touch on a few prospects who are still in the minors. We don't have to spend a ton of time on these guys, but I think they're important to talk about for fantasy owners heading into next year who are kind of looking ahead. And I'll start with JP Crawford. He was the number one on the BP midseason update. What's sort of your truncated take on JP Crawford in terms of his offensive impact?
You know, I think he was number one, and that's a real life ranking. Obviously, Brett had a different ranking for fantasy. Mm-hmm. I think he's, you know, you brought up Lindor before. I think there are some similarities there, except I don't think he has quite the offensive kind of abilities that Lindor has shown thus far. So, you know, I think he's a really good prospect, and he was relatively safe play for number one. Like I said, if you wanted to go with Moncada at number one on offense, I think that was a reasonable case to make. Crawford, you know, shortstop, I think he's a really good shortstop on defense, and so that kind of held a lot of value in my mind. And I don't think he is devoid of power, but despite being a guy with good speed, he doesn't run very much, which is a little bit disappointing. So don't let that speed grade throw you off. He's not someone who's run extremely successfully so far. So I think it's kind of I don't think he's going to be necessarily even a top 10 shortstop next year, or maybe even the next few years. It's more of just a guy a guy you can plug in.
Has Brendan Rodgers given us any reason to doubt the ceiling that we've kind of all project for him eventually down the road in Coors if he stays with the organization?
I don't think so. I mean, he's 20 years old and he hit 20 home runs in a full season at low A. The Rockies have pretty much good places to hit all the way up. And so we have to keep that in mind, but he's been really good. It's 120. He's got 19 home runs right now. He's got 110 games. So over a full season, that'd probably be over 20. I think the ceiling is still there. I really believe in the bat. And playing in Coors is only going to help.
Yeah, I'm a big Rodgers fan too. Austin Meadows, do the health issues concern you at all? Because it seems like he's always dealing with something, and I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a double-edged sword. I think, you know, how impressive he's been despite all the missed development time is really encouraging. At the same time, at some point you need to stay healthy. You need to stay on the field. Yeah. So... certainly a concern, but I really buy into the talent that's there, and, you know, hopefully it's something where as he kind of matures and fills out, maybe he can avoid some of those nagging injuries.
If you could describe Clint Frazier in one word, what would it be?
Ginger.
I like it. Victor Robles struggles in high A, so to speak. I mean, relatively speaking for him. Is this you know how I feel about him, but should we, I don't know, are we making too much of him as a fantasy prospect? Maybe.
It's possible because some of his major tools are on the defensive side, right? I mean, he's got a good arm, he's got a really good glove, there's an aspect to his prospectness that doesn't apply as well to fantasy. He is a guy who can run though. And he's going, and I think he's going to steal you some bags. I think the power. I mean, look, I don't think over the fence power is really going to be a part of his game very much, and it'll be enough that you wouldn't want to avoid playing him at any point. But I do think he's going to hit for average. I think he's going to hit for a really good average, frankly. And I do think at the same time his position on real life prospect list is going to oversell potentially his fantasy impact.
Two shortstops here, Amed Rosario or Gleyber Torres. Who to you is more intriguing from a fantasy standpoint if you had to pick one today?
That's tough. Neither are my favorite from a fantasy angle. I've had a scout tell me that Rosario is, or that he's had people say to him. So, you know, this is third hand and you can take it, you know, with major grains of salt, but, Alcides Escobar, right? And that's not the most intriguing fantasy profile, but there are years when Alcides Escobar hits, you know, 280 or 300 with a bunch of stolen bases. And that's really valuable. The year that he hits, you know, 270 or even if it's 280 and he's not getting on base enough to steal 20 bases, he's almost not rosterable depending on the league that you're in. So there's kind of a double-edged sword there with a guy like Rosario slash Escobar. Torres is really more of a sum of his parts guy, and I don't know that there's going to be a tremendous impact in any one category. I don't know if he's going to, you know, get 20 stolen bases. I don't think he's going to hit for a ton of power. And so with that sense, you're really more of a batting average with a bunch of other things scattered in. And, you know, if you want to look for consistency, Torres might be the guy. If you want to look for, if I'm a redraft player, I'm leaning more towards a guy like Rosario, who in any year could be considerably more valuable than a guy who's just consistently solid.
Am I correct in my statement that Eloy Jimenez is the most exciting prospect in the minor leagues to look at right now? In terms of if you project him out in that line,
it depends on who you're talking to. You know, we've talked about Robles. I mean, people are gonna talk about him certainly. Eloy is from an offensive standpoint. There's a lot to like, and I think we were intentionally aggressive with him in the midseason list, and I don't regret that in the slightest. The power is unbelievable, and the bat speed is electric, and. I think he's going to be able to hit for average. You know, I think he's kind of in my mind a little bit on the Nomar Mazara track, right? Which doesn't mean debuting at 21. But when you talk about a guy who is going to hit for average, a decent average, and going to provide a lot of power, and, you know, the stolen bases are probably not going to be a significant part of his game, but just someone who's going to drive in runs, probably score runs, hit for power, hit for a solid average, be a four category guy, but impact in a few of those. I think that's someone who Eloy Jimenez could be down the line.
If you need any more evidence that he's going to be special, I mean, watch the Futures game. He came in and put on a show.
Exactly. He did everything, even on defense, which was, you know, people aren't going to, when they talk about Eloy Jimenez, they're going to talk about his bat, but he made a hell of a play in the Futures
game. Okay, when you saw that play, I was watching it live when it happened. At first, was your first reaction? Because mine was, oh my God, please no. Like, don't try and scale
that wall. Yeah, I didn't want it. It's like, it wasn't worth it. This is an exhibition.
I thought he was going over the wall, and somehow he didn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was crazy.
Absolutely.
All right, two quick guys here that we haven't talked about, but I think fantasy owners will want a take on these guys. Dan Vogelbach, where do you stand? Are you hashtag Team Vogelbach or hashtag no?
Hashtag no. I'm not there. I know it's you and Brett. That's the whole.
Well, team. Wilson too. That's the whole Wilson Caraman as well.
Oh, okay, God, yeah. That's
we're developing a little clique here of.
Yeah, there's gonna be a coup.
There might be. I think he's a better fantasy prospect. Obviously, a better.
that is absolutely true. I think he's gonna be useful. I don't think he's gonna be like completely irrelevant.
Like
or
Billy Butler was relevant, so.
I don't see the ceiling. Right. Well, okay, but if it's that's kind of the thing. If he's Billy Butler, I mean, he'll have been oversold.
Okay. Dylan Cousins, I think I'm saying that right. Yes. He hit 40 home runs, so people are going to talk about him all offseason, but it was in Reading, which is a notorious hitter's park. Do you get the sense that he's going to be, I guess, relevant? Cuz I don't really get that vibe. I don't know what to make of him because of the context in which he hit those home runs.
I think there's a relatively low bar for relevancy. So, yeah. Probably relevant. Do I think he's going to be anything resembling what his minor league numbers this year purport? No, I don't.
Okay. Let's briefly on pitchers here. Who's someone that you've really been impressed with this year that you like moving into 2017? Because honestly, the rookie pitching class is really not that impressive. You have only seven guys under the age of 25, rookie eligible, who've thrown more than 100 innings this year. And one of them is nearly Dylan Bundy. So it's a weird group. But who?
I mean, the guy that stood out to me the most is someone I wasn't even insanely high on was Michael Fulmer. You know, I know health has been a big thing for him, and he's able to stay healthy. No one, look, people like the talent, but and he clearly took a step forward last year with his slider becoming more consistent. But I thought he was kind of going to struggle in the majors without that third pitch, and the changeup has been really quite useful for him, and so he's been able to get through the lineup and turn it over several times, and he's been really, really good. Another guy is as you know, I love Blake Snell. And I think he's kind of been what we could have expected, and that's there's no shame in that. Look, he's missing a lot of bats. I think he's walking too many guys, which has been the case for him kind of throughout his career. And he made some progress on it last year a little bit, and went after hitters. I think he needs to do more of that if he's going to keep the ERA in a reasonable range. But you know, 3.39 right now as a rookie, that's nothing to be ashamed of. And if he can accrue a bunch of innings and miss a lot of bats, that's going to play just fine in fantasy leagues.
Yeah, so two guys who stand out to me that I find myself circling or every time I pull up a 2017 preliminary ranking sheet right now, Julio Urias and Alex Reyes, because I think the upside there is massive with both of these guys, but I think it comes down ultimately to what role they have going into next year. So I guess I'll start with Urias, because you do follow the Dodgers very closely. What type of role do you envision him having in terms of how many innings are they going to let him throw before they return him to the glass case?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually something I'm working on an article that hopefully I can get published here this week.
Cool.
But it's something that is certainly concerning. I mean, he's at about 113 innings over the course of 2016, if you combine his minors time. I think that's frankly beyond where that might be about where they wanted him to be at the end of the year, and we've still got kind of a month left, and he's one of the best pitchers in the rotation right now, although Kershaw's coming back. But I think he's easily the fourth best guy in the rotation behind Kershaw, a healthy Rich Hill, and Kenta Maeda. And so they kind of have a decision to make, and I think they're going to leave him in the rotation because they've got a four-game lead right now, but they probably need to think about sealing that up, and to do that, they need to leave him in the rotation. The option could be that, you know, Jose De Leon just came up and made a start, and that they could transition Urias to a bullpen role and let De Leon kind of take his space and fill out the rotation with Kazmir or Anderson if healthy, or Brandon McCarthy if he's healthy. They have a lot of options, and he could be well served to kind of throw more innings but do it in a little more of a controlled capacity. I do think that the big problem when comparing a guy like Urias to Reyes is that they're going to be really concerned about the number of innings he's thrown this year and how it affects him next year, and thus how many innings he's going to be able to throw next year. You know, I had him in an NL only that I traded him away because it was a contract thing where I can only have him for 3 years. And that being the case, I don't know if he's going to get to a full set of innings, 180 plus innings, until 2018. And if that's the case, I'm not really exacting full value for him. So I think people who want the rate stats, look, the strikeouts are there. The production is going to be there on a rate basis, but you might only be getting 145, 150 innings next year. And, you know, that's reasonable. I think there was a lot of – I was someone who would buy Eric Bedard expecting injuries and only getting 150 innings back when he was good but always hurt, and was willing to take the strikeouts. And I think there's a case to look at him in that context, but you have to be looking at him in that context and not as a full season guy.
Yeah, it's one of those tempering expectations kind of things. Obviously, absolutely. The talent.
And with Reyes, he's been really good in his limited. Look, he came up in the bullpen, and I love that he's starting right now. I know that it probably wasn't the Cardinals' plan, but he's looked really good, and I think he could be a full season guy much quicker. I know he's missed time with the suspension, and he hasn't been, you know, a huge innings guy, but it seems like the Cardinals are willing to be a little bit more aggressive with him than the Dodgers have been with Urias. And, yeah. And he's, you know, and there's reason for that, in that he's kind of a bigger guy. You know, he's 6'3". Urias is closer to 6 foot, and you know, it just might be a strain thing, and what their frames say that they can build, or organizational approach. You know, those things matter.
Reyes is older too, I think, by
he is,
pretty
by
big,
a few years, yeah.
Big swing. Yeah. So, cool. Craig, hey, thank you so much for coming on. Really, really appreciate you taking the time here today. This has been a lot of fun. We should do this more often.
Absolutely. I had a blast, and I enjoyed how many times we said brief, and then we're not brief at all.
Yeah, sorry about the length, but I hope everybody appreciates your insights. It's always good stuff. I'd put it on the level of an Alex Reyes. So,
Well, that's extremely generous, but thank you, and I'm more than happy to do it, and if people like it, well, I'll do it going forward, and if people don't like it, I'll do it twice as often.
Awesome, awesome. All right, so we're going to take a quick break and come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 103 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a super premium membership today. You get exclusive access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Once again, thank you to Craig Goldstein for coming on today. You can follow him on Twitter at CD Goldstein. You can email us, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. And finally, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio app, or whatever you use to listen to this podcast. So once again, thank you to Craig. We're going to have Brett Sayer and Mike Gianola back this week for another episode of Flags Fly Forever. We're going to talk September call-ups. We're going to talk the home stretch. We're going to give you some of our insights and our keys to a victory as we approach the fantasy playoffs in the final two or three weeks of the season here. It's time to go win a championship. So we're going to help you do that on the next episode coming up later this week. Brett and Mike will be back. It's going to be a lot of fun. So thanks for listening today. Until our next show, this is George Pistol saying thanks. And so long, everybody.